Jon Stewart is back at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
And I like old school rap. That's my favorite. I like old school. Like Tupac is my favorite rapper. I love Tupac. He's been dead over 20 years, but his music still makes you relate to things you never been through. Stuff you never experienced. You hear Tupac talk about it, you're like, yeah. I know what you mean, Tupac. I get it. My favorite Tupac song is Dear Mama. Dear Mama, that's a song he writes to his mom. In it, he got a line where he says to his mom, he says, even as a crack fiend, mama, you always were a black queen, mama. And I don't think my mom's ever tried crack. But that did not stop me from writing those lyrics on her Mother's Day card. Tupac had me inspired. I was like, wait till you read this, man. This is from the heart. I mean this.
All right, that was Ian Lara talking about Tupac. I love that bit. I am Tom Tkar, of course. This is Stand Up with Tom Tkar, and I'm joined, as always, by producer extraordinaire Coach T. How are you, Coach?
I'm doing well. Doing very well, actually.
Oh, hell yeah. That's good to hear, man. I love that Ian Lara bit because I relate to it so hard. It's about him being really into Tupac and him writing the lyrics to Dear Mama on a card to his mom, and the line is, even as a crack fiend, mama, you always was a black queen, mama. And I relate to that so hard because I was also super into Tupac as a kid, and I made my mom a Mother's Day mix CD.
Really?
I put Dear Mama on there, and I didn't even think about, like, even as a crack fiend, mama. It was like, my mom is like a white woman in Indiana. I'm truly curious if she enjoyed that. She listens to the show, so maybe she'll tell me. But very funny stuff. Anyway, this is we got a great show today.
This is a special show, man.
We have our first guest, and
this is a big one. I'm dropping bombs right now. I'm triggering bombs right now.
I love it.
To do that.
I love it. I'm very excited to listen to that. Listen back to that. I could use it this week, man. I am going through it. I actually need to talk to Comedy Central about this. My hard drive got stolen. My car got fucking robbed this week, Coach.
I saw that on Twitter, man, and it was one of those things where I didn't know how to communicate to you because I didn't want to like it because then it felt like I liked it. You know?
Well, I was proud of myself because I was immediately making jokes about it, whereas there's a different version of myself that would have been very devastated, and I'm trying to be a little more zen these days, a little bit more chilled out, and I'm getting older. I just don't have the intensity that I used to, but I parked in a very fancy, like, hipstery neighborhood, and somebody broke into my damn car. And what's frustrating is, so I walk up, I left my car overnight, I had some drinks, and I just left my car. Because my show, The Sultan Room, Good God, is popping off. If you live in Brooklyn, check it out, although this one's sold out. I guess that it's going to be weekly, I think. But it's a rooftop show, it's safe, it's socially distanced, all that good stuff. Open air. Every Wednesday at the Sultan Room, very cool venue. But I go to park over there. I leave the car because I have some drinks at the old Sultan Room, and then we get Uber home, and I walk back to find my car the next day with a broken window. And here's what's annoying: people were like, "You shouldn't leave valuable things in your car." I didn't have valuable things in my car. All I had was my Comedy Central backpack, which I'm devastated is gone.
Hold on, it said CC on the backpack.
It said Comedy Central Stand Up Half Hour Presents or whatever, because it was my half hour backpack, and I fucking love that thing.
Tom, I think I know what this is.
What's that?
I think I know the motivation.
Okay, let's hear it.
It's a cold world out here, and I think people who are creating joke mysteries want to stop you from solving joke mysteries.
Oh my God, I knew it. There's deviants out there trying to get in the way of comedy justice.
Somebody's been following
you. They don't want to hear a joke detective.
They're trying to foil your plan.
Oh my God, you're so right, Coach. It was right in front of me this whole time.
If there's a joke detective, that means that there's a joke Riddler. That's there's true. A joke Joker. There's a joke drama penguin. Detective. Yeah. You have villains.
I think you're right. I think that it was Joke Sandman showed up and he.
So somebody has a hard drive of all the Comedy Central joints?
That's right. So they're just laughing it up out there wearing my backpack. It's funny because it's a backpack that has my credit on it, like my Comedy Central half hour credit. So now if I walk up on somebody, they're wearing a Comedy Central half hour backpack, and they don't look like any comedian I know. I'm gonna think they stole it. Then I'm gonna accuse them. They'll be like, "What are you? I did Comedy Central half hour 5 years ago. What are you talking about?
This is crazy. Oh, shit. So there's gonna be leaked albums out there. You are a comedy DJ, man.
It's dark stuff, but yeah, so somebody stole my damn backpack. Anyway, we have a big show today. I don't want to take up more time, but we got a bunch of emails. Send in emails if you got questions, concerns, all that good stuff, or if you want jokes, if you're looking for a bit, or if you want to make me and Coach laugh. I forgot about that.
Yeah, make me and Coach laugh.
If you got a bit, you have an opportunity. If you're trying to write some jokes, make me and Coach laugh by sending in your jokes, suttpod@gmail.com. And like I said, we got some hot clips for you today. We have our first guest of all time, Adam Caton Holland. So what we did, I got a little sneak peek of his album for you, Semblance of Normalcy, and it's out now. And I've got a clip of that for you, and I had him show me some of his favorite comedy, and so I let him pick a clip for you guys to hear today, and that is from Eugene Merman. So here are Adam Caton Holland and Eugene Merman.
I'm a dad now, gotta get cool dad habits, dad pastimes. That's why I've full-fledged embraced birdwatching. Yeah, you're looking at an OG birdwatcher up here, and I will not apologize for it. I now know enough about birds to know that I know nothing at all. I'll go birding with old men, 70 and 80-year-old dudes that put me in my fucking place. I'll be like, guys, I think I just saw a ferruginous hawk. They'll be like, really? Earlier, you thought a grackle was a red-winged blackbird. So why don't you get in the back of the line and speak when spoken to, boy? There's a term in bird watching which is so funny, you're gonna think I'm making it up, but I'm not making it up. This term is jizz. And birdwatchers use it all the time. It's not the jizz you're thinking of. It's G-I-S-S. And it stands for General Impression of Size and Shape. And it's a birdwatching term. Like, if you can't get the bird in your binoculars properly to identify it, it flew way too fast. Based off of jizz, you can be like, well, it had the jizz of a hawk. So let's say hawk. It had the general impression of size and shape. It was the size of a hawk. It flew like a hawk. It had the jizz of a hawk. And it's fucking hilarious. And I'll be out there with these men, and they're like, well, that had the jizz of a robin, so let's just say robin. Jizz of a spotted towhee, let's just say spotted towhee. Jizz, 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 all the time, jizz, jizz. And I'm laughing, because I'm a child, but they're saying jizz so much, and it's funny to me. 9 times out of 10, these guys will identify a bird based off of jizz alone. And the one time that they can't, they just drink its semen. And then they know. Then they know for sure what it is. I recently went on a bird watching expedition out to the eastern plains of Colorado looking for raptors. There's a bunch of us that met up at the Museum of Nature and Science at 5 a.m. to caravan out there together. It was me and my wife and 12 150-year-olds. And they had us gather there in the foyer and introduce ourselves to one another before we caravaned out together. So I was like, okay, my name's Adam, and I'm excited for a big day of birding. All right. Got back in line. Now, bird watchers are a very quixotic group. Strange bunch. This next guy gets up there. He was an old fella, cherubic, had a big beard, looked like Santa Claus. He gets up there. He goes, I'm Rod, and Adam, I will remember your name through the following poem. And then he cleared his throat. He goes, fleas. Adam had them. I was like, is this fucking happening? So even though it wasn't my turn to speak again, I got back in front of the group. And I said, hey, Rod, I'll remember your name through the following poem. Rod, what a cocksucker. You have made a very powerful enemy today here, Rod. Sorry, my poem didn't rhyme. I'm a beatnik. Somebody told Rod I was a comic. He was on my dick all day. Tell me a joke. Tell me a joke. It's like, get the fuck out of here, Rod. You burn this bridge. I don't have fleas, man. He goes, if you tell me a joke, I'll show you all these amazing bird photographs that I took. He proceeded to produce a camera from a canvas bag with a lens as long as my arm. This was easily a $20,000 camera lens, like safari quality photo lens. And I was like, yeah, dude, I'll tell you any joke you want to hear. You want to hear a short joke, long joke, racist joke? I don't give a shit. Show me those photos. Told him a joke. It passed his weird Rod test. He started showing me these photos, and they were amazing. Like, it was clear that this dude had cultivated this skill over decades of bird watching. And I was looking through his photos with him, and just in that moment, the beef between Rod and I was squashed. We were new, unlikely friends out there on the eastern plains of Colorado. Like, Rod would see a bird, and I'd be right on his heels checking it out. I'd see a bird, Rod would shuffle over the best he could, and he'd check it out. We saw so many hawks, holy shit. I mean, Cooper's hawk, red-tail hawk, obviously. But, like, Swayson's hawk, Harris hawk, Ferruginous hawk, prairie falcon, fucking what? But you want to see an owl. You're out there looking for raptors, you want to see an owl. And I was the first person to see an owl. Because, again, my eyes are, like, 95 years younger than anybody in the... It's like, Rod, I got an owl. Rod came over, framed it up in his camera, took a bunch of dope photographs that he later emailed the entire group. And I sat next to Rod on the car ride home. And I just thought about all we had been through over the course of the day. And I felt really close to him. I felt close enough to produce a piece of paper from my pocket. And I said, Rod, I don't want to be the clipboard hero outside of Trader Joe's. But you and I both know they're fracking the shit out of this area. And it would mean a lot to me if you would sign this petition, which really just asks that they frack responsibly to protect the native species that you and I so cherish. And Rod looked at me like I was his grandson. He couldn't have been prouder. And he was like, Adam, I would be honored to sign that petition. And good for you for fighting the good fight. Your generation's gonna have to fix this mess. And he signed my piece of paper. And just like that, I became the legal heir to everything that Rod owns. It's called an inheritance transfer form. And you just download them from irs.gov. These old people, they're so lonely and like genuinely confused. I figure I groom 3 or 4 more Rods, I'll be able to afford a camera lens like that in no fucking time. Fuck you, Rod. You don't come at me, dude. I play for keeps. I don't have fucking fleas, man.
I did a bunch of shows in London in the fall with some friends. And after the first night, we went to this bar and we were walking down some stairs. British stairs, but like ours. A little more arrogant. And they took a little less responsibility for the Iraq war. Basically the same. And I was walking and I slipped and I flew into the air and I landed and I dislocated my shoulder, which is very painful, it turns out. And the only way I knew how to fix a dislocated shoulder was from the movie Lethal Weapon. Where where Mel Gibson runs into a wall screaming. So instead, my friend squeezed me and yelled. Didn't work. So we had to go to the British emergency room, and I'd never been to an emergency room in another country. And we went there, and they were very nice. They're like, "Where are you from?" And I'm like, "America." And they're like, "No problem." And the doctor gave me morphine. And as he's giving me the morphine, I look at him and I go, "Could you put on some Velvet Underground?" They didn't have any. They were just playing the Jesus and Mary chain. Way too discordant for a hospital. When I was there, I bought a phone, and they were like, "If you don't like this phone, you can return it." And I was like, "Okay." And I used it, and I was like, "Ooh, this is a terrible phone." And so I brought it back, and the woman was like, "Why are you returning it?" I'm like, "Oh, I just don't like it." And she's like, "No problem." And she starts entering my name and address. And finally, she's like, "Oh, I have to, why don't you like it?" And I'm like, "I just don't like it." And she's like, "No, I have to write down a reason." And I was like, "Oh, okay. This phone believes in intelligent design." She had to be like, "The phone believes in intelligent design." And maybe just keep wanting to buy phones and return them. And just be like, "This phone smells like chocolate." I was in the bathroom of this cafe, and somebody wrote on the wall of the bathroom, they wrote, "Just because you stole my chalk doesn't mean you stole my voice." Agreed. Chalk is the least permanent form of political discourse. However much I wish that Hitler had written Mein Kampf in chalk, and just been like, "Oh, I had this whole thing about how the Jews are dirty rats, but then it rained. Oh well, I guess I'll go back to painting." I hit a guy on a bike with a door, of a car, not like a door I carry around, and be like, "Stop saving the earth." By accident. I opened the door of my cab, and I hit this guy, and he started screaming at me, and he's like, "Look where you're going, you broke the law." And I'm like, "Look where you're going." And we're just sort of yelling, and I look down and I see a bike lane. And as he's screaming at me, I look at him and I go, "Sorry, I was wrong." He was so mad. He was like, "No big deal." He had to go home and be like, "I met this really nice guy who hit me with a door." It just made me want to cut people off in traffic just to apologize and be like, "Sorry, that was my fault." I asked you guys to ask me questions to give you guys advice, to write down questions on note cards, and here they are. And let me give you some advice. Just answer some of your questions. Well, where should my ashes be placed after I die? Good question. Inside the mouth of a fat kid. My consciousness keeps projecting into my dire wolf. What should I do? Get a job. I'm thinking of becoming a Jew. Any advice? Yes. I recommend God choosing you. To be one. It's not a burn. Isn't that the thing? I'm Jewish. I should know. I shouldn't be asking you. But I believe God has to choose you to be very special. And despised for thousands of years by all the world's governments. What should I do if my girlfriend has become comfortable with shitting while I am her house? If you mean in her house, you should totally deal with it. If you mean she is like, "You're in my house and I'm going to shit in you," that is a legitimate problem. One, you should make her move out. And you should definitely not let her use you as a bathroom. I don't know what you mean. Uh-huh. How many cats is an acceptable number to own before you're considered crazy? Two. At Three Cats, it's like, what are you doing? And that's the Three Cats is the gateway to coke and stuff. What's a creative way I can let my boyfriend know how much he means to me? I would say dress up like Batman and pretend that his penis murdered your parents. With your butt. Can you recommend a vehicle that will handle well in snow and ice without compromising fuel efficiency? Helicopter! How do you deal with a small penis? I really have no idea. And then with it, advice for online dating? Well, I definitely wouldn't lead with that. How do you get three college-age children to move out of your house? Ooh, raise them better. That was fun.
All right, that was Adam Katenholland and Eugene Merman, and we are back, and we have our first ever guest on the show. You just heard him. Adam Katenholland's here.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good, man. Good to have you. I love that clip. You don't know what we played, but we played your bit about bird watching.
Oh,
I love
good.
It. I listened to the whole album twice last night. One because I love it, and also because I was trying to decide between which clips to pick. Because there's a lot of gold in here, baby.
That's so nice of you. I can't believe you listened to the album twice.
I had my little chisel on me. I was mining for gold, and it was plentiful. I felt like I was in the gold rush in San Fran back in the day.
Well, and there's very little touring going on, so it's like, if you want any of those bits, just take them, and if you get out there first, no one will know they're not yours.
I wanted to ask you about that. So, the album is called Semblance of Normalcy.
Yeah.
When did you tape this?
I taped it September, October 2019.
Did you already have the name picked out, or is it
not
reflection
at all.
Of COVID? Okay.
Well, I was just going through the album, and there's one bit that I really like about this. It's called Prices and Participation May Vary, and it's about this guy who goes off to Vietnam, and he comes back, and the world has changed, and he's not ready for it. And it just kind of talks about people that no longer fit in the current landscape and shouldn't because of their antiquated views. And so it was kind of semblance of normalcy was what that guy was seeking in that bit. So I thought that seems pretty perfect.
It works so well. It's great. And the album art is great. Are you doing Zoom shows and stuff?
I've done a few Zoom shows. The first one I did, I kind of just wanted to wade in. And it's like, okay, I guess this is the new landscape. Let's check it out. And it made me so depressed. Like I was missing comedy bad. And then I was like, let's try it. And it was just, you know, you talking into your computer, and my timing was all off, and you couldn't hear laughs or anything. The format wasn't dialed in. I've since done a few where you can hear laughs that are better, but for the most part, if people ask me to do Zoom shows where I do stand-up, I'm like, can we just talk like a podcast? Because that's
right.
It's not going to be funny if I just, you know, clumsily, very woodenly do stand-up to my computer. It's not what I'm seeking.
When you did the Zoom show, did you like hold a microphone and stand around and stuff?
I didn't hold a mic, but it felt weird. So like that was another thing that got me off my game. I've just don't know what to do with my hands. The only thing I'm glad I did was that in the middle of it, I was like, all right, let's check in with my wife and see what she thinks. And then I just turned the computer around and she was just holding up a six like a judge. Six. And I was like, all right,
man.
That's the highest she's given me so far.
That would actually be a great show for just like Instagram or something if you're just working on material and your wife gets to rate every joke, although it could cause an end to a relationship. So
yeah, by the end
I don't
of the
think
show,
I can handle that.
The end of the show, there's just like a knocked over wine bottle. She's just asleep on the table.
And are you in LA right now? Or are you in Denver?
I live in Denver, so I'm in,
you're
Denver,
in Denver,
Colorado. Yeah,
that is great. That's got to be nice, at least to have you know, Denver instead of being in the cesspool that is LA right now, like Coach is, and like I just was. I'm yeah. in New York and they're doing park shows. I just did a show in Central Park over the weekend.
Dude,
and
tell
I don't
me
know
everything.
Which is worse. I think here's the thing. I feel like we're so desperate to get back that the first time I did it, I was like, this is great. It's almost like comedy. There's no microphone or anything. You're just shouting in the park. And part of me thinks maybe it was a fever dream and I just showed up and I've lost all track of what civilization is. And I'm like, I'm doing a show. And really, it's just me screaming in the park. But
yeah, I mean, this is how we all become those mentally ill people just walking down the street screaming. Like, it's this. They're all left over from the Spanish flu. Like, they were comics. This is the only outlet they have.
I truly think that could be real, unfortunately, because it feels like that when you're especially... I don't know about you, but I've written a little bit in quarantine, and I've realized a lot of the stuff that I've written is for... I've done it on Zoom shows where you're kind of... It's like doing a studio album. Like, you're not writing any of this stuff for people, really. It's just what you want to say and do. And then screaming it in a park because you don't have a microphone and some of it's dirty. You're like, God, I'm a dirty old man. What am I doing?
I think that show could have given you a mic and a PA. I don't know. I don't know the ins and outs of this show, but
I think legally they might not be able to do that because it's like I think there's some sort of park laws, but they are getting crowds and it is cool and they're paying comedians. So if you live in New York and you want to check that shit out, it's in, there's like four different, there's a whole park circuit now. You can run around and do like four spots in
park circuit.
It's insane.
This next act, one of America's foremost park comedians. You're gonna love this dude. Give it up for Park Ranger Jeff, everyone. Park Ranger Jeff.
He does parks and drive-ins all over the country.
Seriously,
very dark.
Hey,
very
hey, Adam. Just stuff. Because I'm a nerd and I pay too much attention to acoustics, what venue and city did you record your album in?
Ah, it was at Helium in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, that's a great club.
It was just the first time I had played there, and I knew it was a good club, and I had this hour I was proud of, so I was like, let's just tape them. Like, I didn't have any destination in mind at that time, but I just kind of felt like this would be a good weekend to tape it. And I'm really glad I did, because lo and behold, we go into pandemic, and I'm like, well, I got this album, and I've managed to get it out to the world, so I'm excited.
Wow, that's a brilliant move. And I think from now on, I think that a lot of comics, myself included, are just kicking ourselves for not recording anything before this that could be an album. And it's great that that was ready to go because... Like you said, who knows when we'll be able to tour again or record.
Right.
I'm sure there's all kinds of comics that are just like, God damn it, I was so close to recording an album.
I know. And I'm sure some of that stuff will still be fine. But I think there is also an urge and a recognition amongst all of us, like, you probably should toss out everything you had before this.
I know. I find myself... I did one weekend, we've talked about it here, it was when the numbers were all going down, it seemed like everything was going to be good, and I did one weekend, and I was like, nope, it's shut it back down, this was stupid.
Yeah, I
understand,
man.
And somebody in the venue had, like, got corona, so I was like, oh, shit. Like,
wow.
Not from our show, but just it was in a giant building, and somebody got it, and I was like, oh, great. Now I'm going to go home, make my girlfriend sick. I'm going to feel like an idiot. Anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit about your taste here because I sent you a message. And this is how I want to do these shows when we have guests because my job on here is to pick clips each week. And I like to get to know the comics that we're going to have on by having them pick clips. And you sent me quite a great list of comics. You have incredible taste, and which I mean it's very similar to mine. I really
like
love
little pat on the back for Tom.
Yeah, exactly. So you sent me that you love Canaan's Trader Joe's bit. Unfortunately, I don't think that we even have that on Comedy Central, but it's a killer bit and you should look it up because the Trader Joe's founder, I believe, just passed away recently, and that joke is very relevant. But it's one of the best. But we just played Canaan, and then Rory and Dana Gould. I love them all. I decided to go with Eugene Merman because we hadn't played him yet, and he was honestly somebody I kind of hadn't thought to play, and I do love his stuff so much.
Me too.
We played a clip where he talks about hitting a cyclist with a car door, which and then immediately realizing he's wrong and apologizing, and I love it so much because in New York that's a big thing where you're just you fuck up and you want to be angry and you go, "Ah, it's on me," and then just seeing something get diffused. I love his sense of humor. Will you just talk a little bit about Eugene Merman and what he means to you?
Oh, my God. He means the world to me. And we're only, like, vaguely friends. But so back in the day when I just started doing comedy, I was pretty new to it. And, you know, I didn't grow up worshiping at the altar of stand-up, so I didn't really have great taste. And I liked stuff that I heard at the club, you know, like in the, it was club comics. And my home club is Comedy Works. They bring in great acts. I remember thinking Dave Attell was the best thing ever. And I still think Dave Attell's amazing. But then I was working
that album
as
recorded there. We talked about Comedy Works a few weeks ago when we played some of Skanks for the Memories.
Skanks for the Memories. And I remember that was my go-to album. I was like, Dave Attell's the best. This is the funniest, period. That was what I was thinking. And I was working at a newspaper at the time, like the Alt Weekly in Denver. It's like the Village Voice of Denver. And the music editor got a comedy CD, and he just threw it on my desk. He's like, "Hey, you do comedy. You'd like this." And it was Invite Them Up, which was Eugene Merman and Bobby Tisdale's famous show. And it was like a 2-CD compilation. And I mean, it had everybody. It had all the dudes from The State, early Birbiglia, early Eugene Merman, Dimitri Martin, Aziz. And I was like, I liken it to that scene in the movie. It's like a 70s movie, and the cool older brother gives the younger brother an album, and he goes and puts the old school headphones on and like lays back in bed and has his mind blown. That's what it was like. It was just like, here is indie comedy. And after that, I just chased after Eugene Merman and pestered him to get on shows, and eventually got on shows and met so many great friends through that. So I've always loved what the world Eugene created in New York.
Absolutely. I had a similar thing where I was also into, I was into a lot of stuff because I did watch so much comedy as a kid, and I was like a little altar boy or whatever of the comedy world, but I hadn't seen Eugene Merman, and a lot of what I was
seeing
was... That's
got to be your title, little altar boy of the comedy world.
I was used to, though, I was going to the Comedy Attic a lot in Bloomington, Indiana, and I was seeing a lot of club comics that I loved, and then I went to see Flight of the Conchords, and Eugene opened, and he had a theremin and all this shit. Actually, I think he came to the club with a theremin, but... he just had such a weird style, and it was when he was doing his postcard bit, and it blew my mind that you could do that, and I just loved it. We don't have a ton of time left. I wanted to get into, because you also sent me a lot of Reggie Watts stuff, and I listened to it, and it was great. You might want to talk about what is stand-up comedy to you, because Reggie does something so different. And so cool, and it sounds cool, and listening to it, I was like, God, this is so different from what I do.
Totally. Oh, totally.
It's
and like,
so interesting and fun and cool.
And brilliant.
I've never been cool.
And you're kind of just like, why do I even get on stage when the guy can do that? Like, that's the show everyone should be watching. But I don't know. I feel like Eugene opened that door to the world of, like, experimental. And in my mind, certainly with Eugene, like, more literary. And it's very goofy and silly, but you can just tell there's a deep intelligence underneath all of it. Like, it's almost like these guys are so smart they can attempt the surreal, goofy shit. And I like that because I always wanted to be a writer, and I just like books, and this just seemed like a smarter breed. And then Reggie just does, you know, it's clearly funny. It makes you laugh, but it's also so musically great. Kind of like the Flight of the Conchords. Like, the reason it works is because the music's so good. They're such good musicians, and then they just decided to be funny on top of it. And I think Reggie does that, albeit with a 5-track and just doing shit you've never seen before.
Yeah, he definitely turns it on its head. And it is true that...
Tom.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think a lot of time, especially when you're a younger comic, you spend a lot of time thinking of, like, that's not my type of comedy, or that's not comedy, or people are quick to be like, if this guy's not
up on stage 500 times a year. He's not a comic. And then it's like, who cares? Like, these guys, I'm so glad that Reggie Watts decides to grace comedy with his presence and do right. whatever vaguely comedy-esque thing he's doing up there. Like, I just tired of labels. Is it cool? Did it make you laugh? Then great, go for it.
Yeah, I think that Reggie Watts and what you're talking about of, like, what is it and over-defining it really breaks it. And I think that the time we're in right now proves that, because who the fuck knows what stand-up comedy is going to look like coming out of all this. And right. I think that widening it as much as you can is only going to help you.
For sure. And so these guys, Eugene and Reggie, widened my horizons of comedy.
Absolutely. Adam, thanks so much for coming on, man. We appreciate you.
Yeah, so I'm fun. So happy so nice to be the first guest. First and last, they're going to pull you aside and be like, the numbers dipped really, really low this week. But thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We love it. And you were great. And definitely check out the album. Like I said, I listened to it twice. And I listen to comedy all damn week. You'd think I'd be tired of it, but not when it's as good as something Adam Caden Holland is putting out. So check it out. Semblance of Normalcy, out now. And we got one more bit for you guys, so stay tuned. This is a clip from my dear friend, Logan Gunselman, one of the funniest people I know. And this is from her set on Comedy Central stand-up featuring. Just a heads up, this is a bit of a dirty little joke for you, so put the kids to bed. And here is Logan Gunselman.
In my spare time, I've been banging a younger dude. Something I've been doing. To the people that wooed, I did not say how old yet. Because he's 12. No, come on. It's not that bad. He's 25, I'm 29. It is a stupid age gap, though. Like, I've been having to learn how to use Snapchat. That's exhausting. And him and his younger roommates, they've been introducing me to new problems that I've never encountered. Like, I went over the other day, and everyone was arguing because someone had come on the Roomba. Sorry, in case you didn't hear me, you know the circular robot vacuum, it cleans your house for you? Yeah, someone got cum on it. And they were all fighting over who did it, and I was way more hung up on how it happened. You know, I was like, was this an accident? Was he in the throes of passion with himself? And the Roomba appeared, right? Was it on purpose? Is this a fetish that I'm unfamiliar with? You know? Or the Roomba, which is a smart vacuum, was it trying to anticipate the mess? You know, catch that shit like a football pass. Also, the 25-year-old, he's the only male roommate living in the house. Like, it was him. He did it.
All right. That was Logan Gunselman. Check out that full set on Comedy Central stand-up YouTube page, where you can see all kinds of good stuff, like full hour specials, and they got a bunch of these little Comedy Central stand-up featuring sets that are so good, and you gotta finish this one that I just played from Logan Gunselman. It's killer. And if you like the show today, just like Netflix has their algorithm, this is the Tom Takargorithm. If you like Eugene Merman, I suggest you also check out Ian Abramson, and if you like Adam Caton Holland, check out Andrew Orvidal and Ben Roy, fellow members of his Denver comedy collective, The Grawlicks, and email us at suttpod@gmail.com with comments, concerns, joke detective, all that good stuff. Rate and review. We appreciate it big time. Share it, subscribe, all that good stuff. And on behalf of Coach T, I'm Tom Takar. We'll see you next week.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.